Good evening. This is Monday Night Roundtable with George Sitari, my co-host Steve Krause.
Hello, hello.
Dakota Sawyer.
Hello.
And our special guest in studio from the Schiffer Report, Paul Schiffer. How you doing, Paul?
Great. Great to be here.
All right. Good, good. I'm glad everybody's here. Everybody's in fine form. You know, I was just thinking, I really shouldn't be here because you guys have all had different viruses and sicknesses the last month or so, and I've been fine. So, you know what? I'm bold. I'm going to take a trip to China and see what's going on, do some investigative reporting. I'm going straight to Wuhan province.
Okay.
Hey, Paul, now you were telling me that North Korea had their first case of the coronavirus.
Yeah,
what
yeah.
happened over there? Tell me about that.
The dictator of North Korea, whatever his name is, he came out and he it was on the news today. He said that they had their first case of of the virus and shot. What did you do? They shot and killed the guy and then threw the body in a fire pit.
That's their
solution. They're just shooting them right
real,
in the head.
Real sensitive bunch of people.
Typical communist. And I've heard the Chinese are doing similar things.
Yeah.
They're not humanitarians over there either.
But, you know, I don't want to beat this issue to death on the coronavirus and everything else. I just want, you know, everybody's talking about it, you know, Fox News Sunday and Meet the Press, and the Democrats are lying what President Trump said, and everybody's analyzing it. My question is, in the United States, well, last time I checked, it was 2 deaths, but I think, Steve, you said it's up to 5 people have died from the coronavirus.
No, in the United States, just 2.
2, okay, 2. We have about less than 100 people infected. Last time I looked, again, I don't check it every minute. Worldwide, it's about 85,000 cases with about 4,000 deaths worldwide. My question is, number one, how is this a pandemic? How is this an epidemic?
Mm-hmm.
And, again, with... You know, I'm sorry for the 2 people that died in the United States. And, you know, they had other health issues. They were nursing home. How does that push the stock market down last week by $1.3 trillion? What the hell kind of economy is this?
No reason for that.
What kind of country is? I don't get it. 2 people died, less than 100 cases in the U.S., and we lose $1.3 trillion in the stock market?
And contrast it with this. I don't know what Dakota had. He sounded like he was pretty sick a few weeks ago. But for 2-3 weeks, I had influenza B.
Right.
I was down for the count, and I've never been that sick. Well, what I had, influenza B, over 32 million Americans were sick with what I had. Probably the same thing you had, too.
I had influenza A and B.
Wow.
18,000 deaths.
And mono, the following
18,000 deaths. Nobody's talking about that, but coronavirus?
Yeah, and 2 people died. And I think the Democrats, the liberals, the leftists are trying to make hay out of this, Steve.
Weaponizing
it. And weaponizing it, you know, politically and to make the economy, you know, tank
it's
or whatever.
It's the Trump virus.
Yeah, well, of course.
Well, this is politicizing, you know, a whole, this is to bring him down for the stock market in the 2020 election just so that they could try to throw him out of office in November.
Well, again, it's still early in the game, and, you know, we've had comments where George Soros was speaking at Davos. Paul, maybe you saw that when they had the, what event did they have at Davos,
The World Economic Forum.
World Economic Forum. Thank you, Dakota. George Soros was saying, hey, it's a long economy rest of the year. Anything could happen with the economy, and sort of like chortling and gleefully saying,
yeah.
Oh, well, you know, we never know what's going to happen with the economy. And we know what he did with the Malaysian market probably 10 or 15 years ago. We know what he did with the British pound and a whole host of things. So, again, if our economy is that fragile that 2 people dying can knock off $1.3 trillion, what's going to happen if we have 1,000 people dying?
Yeah.
Well, no, wait a minute. That happened with Obama, and he claimed a pandemic, or he claimed an emergency 6 months into it.
Yeah.
Right, but that's okay.
But the market didn't go down.
Right. Nobody says anything.
No. I mean, basically, this is just an excuse to sell short.
Right.
That's what it was. It was money making.
And again, I'm not really into the stock market. You know, they talk about it needed a correction because it was overheating.
Oversold.
And all these buzzwords that they use. I mean, is this what a free market, free enterprise economy is supposed to look like? Buzzwords, 2 people dying, overheated economy. I don't know what any of this means. I mean, the economists will tell us because they make $200,000 a year and they have real nice professorships at Harvard and whatever. So they could come up with buzzwords and basically sell us either a bunch of lies or a bunch of nonsense or something just to keep their exalted position. I mean, Paul, this is what the elites do all the time.
Absolutely.
They oversell. They always want to think that they're the experts. And meanwhile, they're regular people. They're going along their business and, you know, keeping the economy humming.
That's right.
Exactly. Well, today the stock market jumped to its highest point during the coronavirus. So it's starting to come back, and I believe throughout the week, as the stock market opens and closes, that we will see the stock market regaining itself and getting back to the top.
Yeah, and let's face it, people, you know, the stock market goes up, people make money, it goes down, they make money, they buy, they resell, you know, pump and dump, a lot of different strategies.
Yeah. Well, so, I think, you know, that there was an article in Forbes about a man who had the coronavirus, and he's saying, you know, it's not as bad as people would make it.
Right.
It's like a common cold, but it's a little bit more far advanced than that. But it's not as bad as people would make it, thinking that, oh, this is a big crisis, that, you know, this is like Ebola, that, you know, it's going to kill everybody just by touching you.
Right. The fears are overwrought. So many people are getting hysterical. People are buying, you know, all kind of supplies, surgical masks, which they say don't work. Some people aren't going. It's so stupid. Some people aren't even going to Chinese restaurants. And they did a survey. 37% of the people said they're not going to buy Corona beer.
Well,
yeah, that's true.
There you go, because that comes from Mexico.
Right. I think they use filtered water.
I've got a news flash for you, George.
Uh-oh.
And this is probably don't hurt me,
Steve.
When you get an order, which you've ordered on Amazon, and it comes from China, do not pop the package bubbles. Because they have been, supposedly, they have been infected with the coronavirus. So right. If you pop them, you're exposing yourself. So
okay, well, I never would expose myself. Hey, but we got a really good show tonight. At the bottom of the hour, 7:35, we have Gary Ka, who will be speaking in Brecksville next week as part of the Red Green Axis. He's going to update us on you know, what he's been doing the last 5 years or so. He's had a couple of great books out in the past. Haven't seen too many books out. And at 8:05, after the news break at the top of the hour, we're going to have Jeffrey Epstein. No, Dakota, not that Jeffrey Epstein. This is a friend of Paul Schiffer's. Jeff Epstein, I met him several times. He's a great guy. He worked in the early days with Brigitte Gabriel with Act for America, but he was also a great friend to Phil Haney, and he's going to give us an update on what's been happening, what's transpired, yes, what he knows. He talked with Paul over the weekend, and Paul, we're going to have you interview him because you know him very well, and I know you have a lot of insight and information that you gathered over the weekend.
In case people don't know, because it hasn't been all over the news except the day after they found his body, Philip Haney was a Department of Homeland Security whistleblower, an expert on Islam, and he was revealing the fact that under Obama, our government was covering up for the jihadists, for the Muslim Brotherhood. He testified before the Senate a few times and had quite an impact. He has a best-selling book that came out a few years ago called See Something, Say Nothing. Any rate, Philip Haney was found dead a little over a week ago, as you guys know.
Right.
Found with a bullet hole in his chest,
right,
laying along the side of the road next to his car, and
right,
it's come out it was murder. And Jeff has some insight on it because he was good friends with him, spoke to Philip Haney a few days before he died, and is in constant contact with Phil Haney's fiance.
Right, and Phil Haney gave a good speech. I saw him several times at Act for America over the last 3-4 years, and his speech was tremendous amount of information.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the, I won't say the founders, but one of the early administrators in the Department of Homeland Security.
He was a founder. You're right. Homeland Security, one of the founders.
And,
yes,
you know, there's been some rumors that he was going back to help President Trump because,
yeah,
there's been a little bit of turmoil within the DHS. But so those are our two main guests, Gary Ka at 7:35 and Jeff Epstein speaking on Philip Haney and his potential murder. And our number is 216-901-0933. 216-901-0933, 216-901-0933, or 888-677-9673. Get those numbers lined up because we think we'll be getting a lot of calls for Jeff Epstein, who will be talking about the most likely murder of Philip Haney.
Yes. And I'd just like to give an update. We do not have a live stream today on this show. We've been having some technical difficulties that we believe that we have worked out for next week. So we should be back with our regularly scheduled broadcast for our live stream next Monday.
Right. We thought it would be better to wait because, you know, we've been having problems with the phone calls coming in and connecting and people being able to be heard, you know, if they're...
So we're trying to make it perfect and so that you, the listener, can be able to hear our broadcast on our live stream perfectly sound and clear.
Right. So now you can still listen on your device or on terrestrial radio. And again, our number is 216-901-0933. Now, Steve, we had a very good meeting on some business things that we're working on Saturday, but after that we went to the Sheriff Mack speech.
Mm-hmm.
Very impressive speaker, very knowledgeable. He's the one that took the Brady Bill to the Supreme Court, and we're going to have a more expansive show on that. We're going to try to have Sheriff Mack, who was a sheriff in Arizona. He took the Brady Bill back in the 1990s that was
to the Supreme Court
to the Supreme
won.
Court and won. But the most fascinating part about that was the majority opinion about basically the 10th Amendment, how it covers that, and the 10th Amendment is alive and well, and states are not vassals of the federal government.
Right.
If they want to do something, they should implement it on their own. And the quotes from Justice Scalia in Sheriff Mack's little booklet were tremendous, alluding to the 10th Amendment, but we could also refresh that with the Ninth Amendment, but we're not going to talk about that much today because it probably need a good hour on the Ninth and Tenth Amendment and the Brady Bill and what Sheriff Mack did. But it was interesting. Sheriff Mack, I can't remember his organization's name. It was Peace Officers.
The Law Enforcement and Peace Officers Association,
right. And I like that term, peace officers. It's not police officers. It's not lawman. It's basically peace officer. Their job is to keep the peace, Paul, not to give tickets, not to lay in speed traps. It's to keep an orderly society worthy of free and moral individuals. Mm-hmm. And he was quite critical of police that just give out tickets, having speed traps, whether it's rolling stop signs or whatever, because their job is to say, hey, look, technically you did violate the law, but no harm, no foul. And
right. Well, basically, my takeaway was that it was all about constitutional sheriffs.
Right.
And that's the gist of what he was pushing, that one of the things that we can do is support constitutional sheriffs, those that are going to enforce the Constitution. And that's why he opposed the Brady Bill, and that eventually won him the win in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. And talking about the Constitution, and we're all concerned about that because we are a constitutional republic. We're not a democracy. We've got Super Tuesday tomorrow. And what's at the top of the Democrat ticket?
Joe Biden.
Well, Bernie Sanders.
Right.
He's not even a Democrat, but he's an affirmed socialist communist.
Right.
And here we have the Democrat Party out of the closet, so to speak. You had the quote last week where the Socialist Party of America folded because the Democrat Party accepted all the platform planks of the Socialist Party, and that was back in 43, I believe.
44, 48.
Yeah. But my point is that, you know, we have a president, President Trump, and we have some events coming up, but President Trump said something very telling in the 2019 State of the Union speech. And he said that we would never be a socialist country. And Mr. Producer, can you play that clip?
All right, here's President Trump.
We stand with the Venezuelan people in their noble quest for freedom, and we condemn the brutality of the Maduro regime, whose socialist policies have turned that nation from being the wealthiest in South America into a state of abject poverty and despair. Here in the United States, we are alarmed by the new calls to adopt socialism in our country. America was founded on liberty and independence, and not coercion, domination, and control. We are born free, and we will stay free.
I thought there was a segment in there where he said, we'll never be a socialist nation. I think the clip got cut off a little bit too early. But, Steve, you know, it's amazing President Trump saying we'll never be a socialist nation. First of all, I can't believe that was over a year ago at the last State of the Union. But the Democrats are doing a very good job of trying to create a socialist nation. They're coming up with all kind of caveats. Paul, they like to say that, oh, we want to be like Denmark and Sweden and Norway, that they're socialist nations, but they're really hip and cool. What do you know about that?
Yeah, the truth is the socialism they're promoting is more of the ilk of Venezuela and Cuba. And as you know, Bernie Sanders promotes Cuba. He doubled and tripled down on his support for Fidel Castro. And it's just a smokescreen they put up. They understand maybe half of the American people don't understand the brutality of socialism, how it always leads, or 90% of the time leads to hardcore communism. And Lenin himself, Marx and Lenin, both brag that socialism and communism are two terms or ideologies that can be used interchangeably.
Right, right.
And so they're both the same.
Right, and even I think it was the Prime Minister of Denmark said Denmark is not a socialist nation. They're a capitalist nation that just has a safety net, a social safety net for, you know, people who are poorer, who have had...
Which we do too.
Right. Right. So we're not a socialist nation in that sense. I mean, we do have a safety net. But again, in our system, the safety net should be at the state and local level, not at the federal level, for each state to determine their own way, who they're going to help, how they're going to help, you know, the so-called widows and orphans and the indigent and the down and out. But you know, you need to start from the bottom up. First, it should be charity and individuals. Second thing, it should be local government, maybe with soup kitchens or helping with this, that, and the other thing. Then the county, then the state. But, you know, the federal government really has generally no business in creating welfare in a system because, number one, it's hard to monitor. It's corrupt. It's easily manipulated. And most importantly, it's unconstitutional.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, well, the point of the clip that we listened to, and President Trump made it crystal clear, and I apologize to the listeners that we missed that part, but he said, tonight, we renew our resolve that America will never be a socialist country. Mm-hmm. Now, when he threw that gauntlet down in 2019... Bernie Sanders made all sorts of faces in the...
I remember.
Right. And so today, Bernie Sanders is the front runner. And now you see the Democrat Party. They had Pete Buttigieg got the call from Obama to step down.
Oh, I didn't
and,
see that.
And Amy Klobuchar?
Mm-hmm.
How do you put it? Yeah. She got the call, and she's endorsed Biden now. So they're coalescing around Biden, who doesn't know where he is half the time, and he doesn't know who he's talking to, but yet he's a puppet because they're afraid that Bernie may get the nod. And they'll have to somehow figure out how to cheat Bernie again. But I get all these questions all the time from, well, we're already a socialist country because we have Social Security or we have socialist this or we have socialist that. And it's exactly what you said, Paul.
Yep.
They're trying to say we're the socialism of
Venezuela, Cuba.
No, they're trying to say we're going to be like a European socialist,
right.
Democratic socialist. Yeah. But no, he praised Fidel Castro.
Yes.
He likes Venezuela.
And he doesn't hide that fact.
Trump loved, Obama loved Venezuela.
Yes.
And he went over to China. Obama went to China and said, we should be more like. And
Cuba.
And Cuba.
He opened the doors
absolutely
up to Cuba.
So I got a clip here from Milton Friedman, who you know is a renowned economist, but he explained to, and I know some of us will know who this, Phil Donahue used to have a show on during the day, a very popular
talk show.
He's
a second cousin of mine. I don't know why I just admitted yours, that.
Paul, is that true?
My
get
mom
out of the studio. Yeah. So, get out.
So did you
what's
use
odd
was,
is, Paul,
was,
out.
Was that the liberal
my,
side?
We're ready for this. Every one of my uncles on my mom's side has a thick white hair that Phil
really?
Donahue does.
Really?
You know who knew? Our friend Pat Buchanan knew that. Yeah. He goes, you know, he pulled me aside once. It's true. You know Phil. Yeah. They were friends. They, right. Well, they don't agree with each other philosophically, but Pat and Phil Donahue back in the day did a lot of TV right. together. Right. So okay. go ahead.
So what? Anyways, but Milton, Donahue asked him a question, and Milton yeah. in two, and I think it's about two and a half, two minutes, 20 seconds, but please play mm-hmm. the whole clip. Mr. Producer, explained better than I've ever heard anybody explain it. So with that, Mr. Producer, would you play the clip,
again,
please?
Just as a point, it's Milton Friedman, the late Milton Friedman, former Nobel Prize-winning economist from the University of Chicago.
Yeah.
So he's a high-level economist, Ph.D., Nobel Prize winner, free enterprise advocate, Milton Friedman.
When you see around the globe the maldistribution of wealth, the desperate plight of millions of people in underdeveloped countries, when you see so few haves and so many have-nots, when you see the greed and the concentration of power within, did you ever have a moment of doubt about capitalism and whether greed's a good idea to run on?
Well, first of all, tell me, is there some society you know that doesn't run on greed? You think Russia doesn't run on greed? You think China doesn't run on greed? What is greed? Of course, none of us are greedy. It's only the other fellow who's greedy. The world runs on individuals pursuing their separate interests. The great achievements of civilization have not come from government bureaus. Einstein didn't construct his theory under order from a bureaucrat. Henry Ford didn't revolutionize the automobile industry that way. In the only cases in which the masses have escaped from the kind of grinding poverty you're talking about, the only cases in recorded history are where they have had capitalism and largely free trade. If you want to know where the masses are worst off, it's exactly in the kinds of societies that depart from that. So that the record of history is absolutely crystal clear that there is no alternative way so far discovered of improving the lot of the ordinary people that can hold a candle to the productive activities that are unleashed by a free enterprise system.
But it seems to reward not virtue as much as ability to manipulate the system.
And what does reward virtue? You think the communist commissar rewards virtue? You think a Hitler rewards virtue? You think, excuse me, if you'll pardon me, do you think American presidents reward virtue? Do they choose their appointees on the basis of the virtue of the people appointed or on the basis of their political clout? Is it really true that political self-interest is nobler somehow than economic self-interest? You know, I think you're taking a lot of things for granted. And just tell me where in the world you find these angels who are going to organize society for us.
Well,
I don't even trust you to do that.
And that's my point. Where are you going to find the angels?
Well, as I think it was John Adams said, if men were angels, governments would not be needed.
Yep.
So we had a lot of good things. Well, our phone lines are lighting up here. People want to talk about socialism and Trump. Let's start with John, who's been waiting patiently. Good evening, John, and welcome to Monday Night Roundtable with George and the gang. How you doing, John?
Good evening.
Good evening.
A friend of mine and I were going to church yesterday, and we're talking about Bernie and all, and he heard on one of the radio stations Friday that in Florida, the Cuban nationals are fighting to keep Bernie Sanders off of the ballot in Florida because he is not a registered Democrat in his home state.
Right, he's a registered independent, that's correct.
Exactly. So they're trying to keep him off the ballot in Florida.
That's interesting, but you know, Sanders being the elitist he is, and obviously that's why he likes socialist systems. He doesn't think the rules apply to him. He's just an elitist, and he'll just do what he wants to do.
Exactly.
Yeah, but
we'll see how this turns out.
Hey, John, that was a great call, great comment. We got Gary online too. Gary, welcome to Monday Night Roundtable.
Good evening. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
What's on your mind tonight? Oh, this is Gary. Okay, you called a little bit early. Gary, we're going to put you back on hold, and because we still got a break that we got to go to at the bottom of the hour, and we're going to go through that, and we're going to get back to Gary Ka at 7:35. He surprised me at 7:30. I'm, you know, not used to people being that punctual, but Gary, you know, thanks for being so punctual. Mr. Producer, I think we got some bottom of the hour breaks to go through, and we're going to come back at 7:35 with Gary Ka on our different issues here.
When you wake up in the morning,
swamp, fake news, racist hats. Are you afraid to believe anymore? Well, let me tell you of one brave soul who, like David, slew Goliath. The true story of one man's fight against greed, corruption, and insatiable ambition in small-town Ohio, Checkmate reveals why passion and integrity are rare in the corridors of swing state politics. If you want to hear the truth, how the swamp operates in Ohio with all the political corruption in real time, get Steve Krause's tell-all true life story, Checkmate, One Man's Fight Against Political Corruption, available on Amazon. As a newly elected state representative, Steve takes you behind the scenes, behind the closed doors, and rips back the curtain to expose all the lies, the deceit, and power-hungry gamesmanship. Checkmate reads like a TV drama, but it's not.
Once you start it, you won't be able to put it down.
Checkmate, One Man's Fight Against Political Corruption by Steve Krause, available on Amazon today.
Ever hear the of a leaky faucet? Or wake up to the unwelcome flooding of your basement? Well, I have, and I have good news. The Northwest's number one plumbing service is Firelands Plumbing. Our good friend Brian Hockenberry, owner of Firelands Plumbing, has a simple motto and promise. If we can't fix it, you don't pay. So call Firelands Plumbing today at 419-734-6666. There's no job too big or too small. They do it all. So if you're tired of that leaky basement or backed up toilet, don't delay. Call Firelands Plumbing at 419-734-6666. That's Firelands Plumbing at 419-734-6666. Firelands Plumbing, for all of your plumbing needs.
Be afraid. Be very afraid. There are those in Washington who want the IRS to take more of your hard-earned money. Are you tired of being the perpetual cash cow for every scheme, unreasonable program, and for all the fraud, waste, and abuse in our system? Well, good news. I can help. George Tatari has almost 40 years of experience helping people like you keep more of what you make. It makes no sense that the more you make, the more they take. Let George help you keep your money away from the government bureaucratic waste and in your pocket. Call 216-651-1120 right now and schedule your free consultation today. Instead of a victim, you'll be the victor. With many success stories, George helps with tax planning, estate planning, financial and business analysis, and more. The new tax law has many ways to save money with retirement planning, accelerated depreciation, up to 20% exception of net earnings, and so much more. Call 216-651-1120. That's 216-651-1120. You earn it. We'll help you keep it. That's George Tatari, CPA, 216-651-1120. Call now to reserve your seat at the roundtable. Locally, dial 216-901-0933 or toll free at 888-677-9673.
Hey, good evening. We're back on Monday Night Roundtable with George Sitari and the gang. Special guest in studio, Paul Schiffer. They'll be interviewing our guest at the top of the hour, Jeff Epstein. No, not that Jeff Epstein.
Epstein didn't kill himself.
All right, but we have Gary Kahn, line two. Good evening, Gary, and welcome to Monday Night Roundtable. Warming up in the bullpen right behind you is Dan Ramada from the Red Green Axis. Gentlemen, welcome both of you to the show, and welcome to Monday Night Roundtable. I apologize for the mix-up at the bottom of the hour, but we have a lot to cover. Gary, tell us when you're coming to Cleveland, or Dan, you could tell us when he's coming to Cleveland. Gary, why you're coming to Cleveland? What's the topic of your show on the Red-Green Axis?
Sure. Thanks for having me, George, and for Gary as well. He'll be with us next Monday night in Brecksville at the Brecksville Community Center starting at 7 o'clock. Anybody interested after hearing what he has to say this evening or throughout the week at other shows, if they want to know more, they should email me at rga@eaglefiremail.com, and I can fill them in on the details of the meeting. I will file information on Gary and anything else that they want to know with regarding to our group, Red Green Axis Exposed, no longer known as Act for America Cleveland Chapter or Act Cleveland.
So the Red-Green Axis Exposed. Gary, what will you be talking about next week, and what will you be exposing?
Well, I'll be sharing some of my story of when I worked with the government and some of the things that I learned during that time, and a couple of organizations that I was actually invited to join that were involved in pushing this One World agenda quite a few years ago. And I really did what I could back in the 90s to awaken people to what was going on. But things were going pretty well for a lot of people, and it seems like Americans sometimes have to have their backs against the wall before they come around and wake up. But I'm really motivated to a large extent by my background. My parents went through World War II in Europe. They came over here after the war. I was born in Kettering, Ohio, so I'm a native Buckeye. But growing up, I heard all the stories of what they went through. My dad fled from the Nazis and communists in Croatia. My mom grew up under Hitler in Germany with a father who was outspoken against Hitler. And so I guess some of this is in my DNA. I just felt, as a result of what I learned in my job, that I needed to take a stand. I made a commitment back when I was about 11 years old, when I first became a Christian at that time and began understanding what took place during World War II. I promised to God that if there ever was a time when anything was poised to take place in this country, like what happened in Europe during World War II, that I would take a stand, no matter the cost. And so...
Right, Gary, and you mentioned, you know, what you saw in your job. Can you be a little bit more clear? What was your job? What were you doing, and what did you see?
Sure. I was in the 1980s, I served as the Europe and Middle East Trade Specialist for the government of Indiana. I worked directly under the lieutenant governor at that time in commerce, and I was a point man overseas for Indiana to bring in business for our state. So I was on the payroll of the state government, but my meetings overseas were set up through our American embassies at the federal level. And I traveled over 20 different countries during my job, most of them in Europe, but my travels also took me to the Far East when it came to dealing with medical products and some other areas. So I met a lot of very interesting people, both at our embassies and the international business figures that they put me into contact with. And so very quickly, really within the first year, I'll go back, my first assignment was to help export Indiana coal more effectively. And yes, we do have coal in
Indiana. I didn't know that.
A lot of people aren't aware of that.
Right.
And my travels took me to seven different countries on my first trip. Of course, our main competitor in a lot of these countries was the oil industry, and so I had to learn a lot about oil, and I learned fairly quickly that the power among a lot of the oil companies, at least at that time, was concentrated in the hands of a very few people. In fact, at one point, four of the seven largest oil companies in the United States were under the thumb of just one family, to give you an example. And that's not a secret. It was the Rockefeller family, and I know a lot of people have picked on them, but it is true. And so there's a lot of money concentrated there, and I discovered that a lot of that flowed into various organizations pushing this whole one-world concept, the idea of a global government. And at the embassies, I will say this, of course, you know, through the State Department, it's been pretty liberal for a long time. And I was surprised to find how many people in the State Department really were very open to this idea and even supportive of it. There were those I met who were opposed to it as well, but they were in the minority. And so when you look at what's going on in the country today, this helps us to understand how long this has been in motion, for one thing, and the fact that there is such a thing as the deep state, and I think the president is doing everything he can to root out some of these players. But the problem is it goes several layers deep. So if you get rid of one person at the top and move the next person into that position, they may be just as messed up, so right, to speak, when it comes to this whole globalization area.
Right. Well, it's a worldview, and again, that was in the 80s, so that's, well, you know, 30 years ago. Now we see the State Department and their minions and the embassies in different places. They've gone from being liberal to basically being one-world leftists.
Yep.
I think we saw that with the Vidman case and the ambassador and some other cases, Sondland and other people in the Trump administration. But my question is, Gary, how did they envision a one-world system? Was it a one-world system run by the United Nations? Was it based on a regional basis and eventually everybody coming together in a kumbaya moment with an organization beside the United Nations? How did they envision that, and what's your recollection?
They held the UN in very high esteem, and if at all possible, they wanted to build this new civilization, so to speak, around the UN by empowering it. And the first step in that direction was to regionalize the world into political, economic, trading blocks. First economic, really, and then once that had solidified, then turning those economic blocks into political unions and eventually bringing them together into a one-world system. And the idea behind it, I believe, was if somehow the idea of national sovereignty can be eroded away among the countries within those blocks, then it would be easier later on to merge them into something even bigger. And, of course, the European Union was going to be their model. Well, this whole Brexit thing has thrown a bit of a wrench into things, and so we'll see how all this plays out. But they're not going to give up. These people are relentless, and it is a worldview, and there's a religious fervor behind it. And so we can't think that they're just going to give up. In fact, even in the last few years, which have, you know, economically done very well in this country, the number of socialists in the country has still grown. In fact, a recent poll was conducted by the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, and they asked millennials the simple question, do you approve of communism? And the results were shocking. 36% responded yes. And that figure was up from 28% just 2 years earlier. So even during these prosperous times, that number went up by 8% in 2 years among millennials. And one reason is they're pouring out of the colleges with about a 70 to 80% leftist bent. And so my first challenge is to parents. You know, we're paying all this money to help send our kids to some of these public colleges and even some of the professing Christian colleges that have moved toward the left. And they're coming out 4 years later completely changed and not in a good way. And so we really need to reassess all that and try to figure out what to do about it, because I really believe that's a big part of the problem we have is our universities and what they're putting out.
Well, it's even worse. It starts at the probably preschool anymore with gender confusion, drag queen, story hour. So what they're doing is they're stripping away innocence from any potential spirituality, and what they're imbuing it with is a secular humanism or humanist Christianity or Christian humanism, however you want to label it, and they're substituting the decisions for man of man for, you know, greater decisions by a greater almighty person. Paul, we got Paul Schiffer in studio here. Paul, I think you've seen that in college campuses down your way and in different places.
Yeah, all over the country. I just want to say one thing. Gary, I appreciate what you've been doing. I know you won't remember this, but back in the 90s, when your book, your best-selling book, En Route to Global Occupation, came out in 96, I was doing a Ohio-based radio station back then in the Akron-Canton area and had you on a few times. So I remember you from way back in 1996. I'm glad to see you're still waking people up with this message about the one-world government.
Well, we're doing what we can, and appreciate that, Paul. Thanks for bringing that up. Yeah, that's been a few years ago. What I really try to do as a Christian was attach the motivation behind this movement to the political and economic side of things. A lot of times we see what's going on politically and somewhat economically behind the scenes, the push. But what a lot of people don't realize is that there really is a religious motivation behind much of this, and it is a clash of two worldviews. You've got the humanistic worldview that elevates man to God, really, because they keep God the Creator out of the picture. And then you also have the pantheistic Eastern religions, collectively referred to in this country as the New Age movement. And they kind of do the same thing. They elevate man to the status of godhood, but they have a spiritualized humanism type of mix. But in both systems, in communism, socialism, and also within the New Age and the pantheistic Eastern religions, man essentially becomes God. They don't believe in a transcendent God. And therefore, when you throw God out, then anything goes. You know, if a majority agree on anything, then that's the law. It doesn't matter if it's moral or not, and that's what we're seeing with the situation with abortion and so many other moral issues in our country today. But these are generally the same group of people that are promoting socialism and globalization. And you know, we have to be careful. If Sanders gets in, another survey, I pulled this out, is from Gallup poll, and this was just cited by Fox News on February 28th, so just a few days ago. 76% of Democrats overall who were polled said they could vote for a socialist candidate, and 47% of independents said the same. And so when you factor into the equation the fact that there are more registered Democrats in the country, and you begin to play with those numbers, you know, we're up in the at least in the 40-45% range of people in this country who would vote for a socialist. And so that's what we're dealing with right now, and we need to be aware of it.
Right. Dan, tell us again where this event's going to be, and if there's an admission price, and how they could get a hold of you, and where this event's going to be next Monday.
Sure. It'll be at the Brecksville Community Center, which is on One Community Drive in Brecksville, Ohio, about a mile south of Route 82 and on Route 21 there. So starts at 7 o'clock. The doors will open at 6. We do charge a modest fee of $5 per person, and we can cover all of our expenses. And people just need to email me at rga@eaglefiremail, eagle like our national treasure, our favorite bird, the eagle, eaglefiremail.com.
Hey, Dan, and a quick
green, you know, access.
Yeah, and a quick question on the red-green axis. I know the red pertains to communism, socialism, and all the evil isms, but the green part, a lot of people may confuse that the green part has to do with the global green deal, but the green part of the red-green axis has to do with Islam. Is that correct?
Correct. Some and is called Islamism or Islamist, that side of the equation, which happened to be all about taking over this one world. They want one religion for everybody, and that would be Islam.
Right. So they want a political system under the UN. They want an economic system under socialism. They want a religious system and a way of life, so to speak, under Islam. So, Gary, will you be tying the red-green axis together from communism to Islam, or are you just talking about the one-world system in general?
Well, I'll be doing both, actually. One of the organizations I was invited to join a long time ago was the World Constitution and Parliament Association, which back in the 80s was a big player behind the scenes. Not so much anymore, but back then it was. And one of the people listed right near the top of the letterhead was Dr. Enamullah Khan, who was the president of the World Muslim Congress of Pakistan, one of the more powerful leaders of Islam at the time in the world. And so that organization had people in it from all the different religions, but Islam was very prevalent. And in fact, on a per capita basis, there were more people from Pakistan represented in that organization than any other group, I figured out. So, you know, but it's not just about Islam. Their goal is to, I say, bring about a false unity. They want to unify all the religions in the world, and that's the biggest challenge that they face, because as long as you've got, you know, evangelical Christians out there and conservative Jews opposing this new world order, it's difficult for them to bring it about. But they want to unite all the religions of the world together for a purpose, but that purpose is to take them into a one world system. And then what? You know, what happens to our freedoms at that point? So that's my concern. I'll be addressing all these things Monday night. And I'll also be speaking at the church at Warren on Sunday morning at 10:30 on March 8th, the day before. And that's in Cortland, Ohio, on Hoagland Black Stub Road. So I thought I'd mention that as well, if people can come out at that time. 10:30 Sunday morning.
You know, one of the reasons, George, if I can interject real quick, I'm sure, based on what Gary just said. You know, for 6.5 years, Bev and I have been, you know, explaining to the people the role of Islam in our country and how the Islamization is advancing. And one of the ways that it happens is through the implementation of sustainable development. And the reason we try to make these, connect all these dots, is that that's, of course, what the UN's all about, Agenda 2030 and sustainable development. Well, the Muslim world plays a huge role in the UN. The Islamic Organization of Islamic Conference is all the Muslim countries, even though they war with each other. The representatives, you know, hold the largest voting bloc in the United Nations, all 56 of the Muslim countries, plus the Palestinian territories, for now, whatever, we'll see it. But the point is, they have they're big into this, into the green and taking care of the earth, and they think that they can be a leader in this. And then now you have Pope Francis all involved in this, and Alex Newman, our favorite reporter, author, journalist, whatever you want to call him, who was in town with us last June, and has been to these world government summits. So it's just all very tying all together. He reported on
Dan,
the Pope, and yes, go ahead.
I was just going to mention, Pope Francis met with an Islamic leader, really the top Islamic cleric, considered by many, Al-Tayyib from Egypt, last February.
Right.
And together they drafted and signed a document called Human Fraternity for World Peace and Living Together. And this thing's going to be gaining more and more traction. And on May 14th, Pope Francis is launching an international education campaign, essentially to help prepare the world for the coming New World Order. I mean, a big part of this agenda is the environment. So we need to be aware of that.
Hey, Gary, Steve Krause here, and glad to have you on tonight, and Dan. And one of the things that you mentioned earlier about what happens to us Christians or conservative Jews if this comes about, and the first thing that came to my mind is re-education camps, which is, of course, what Bernie Sanders and AOC and others are pushing now, and how the gulags weren't a bad thing, according to Bernie Sanders' supporters, that, you know, the re-education after the Nazification of the Eastern Bloc countries, they had to send those Nazis to gulags and re-educate them that Nazism is bad or whatever, and or Stalinism and communism is bad, and a lot of those people were never heard of again. So as this plays out, because we have Super Tuesday tomorrow, and we have the top of the ticket. I mean, well, Bloomberg's going to be in the first one, right? But Bloomberg was the one who supported a mosque at Ground Zero. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is real stuff, and it's been going on for a long time. So what's your thoughts about the Super Tuesday and how the Democrat lineup is forming up for 2020?
Well, none of them are good in my opinion, but what I'm waiting to see is how Bloomberg performs tomorrow. If he cuts heavily into Biden's vote, then Sanders is clearly going to run on the top in most of the states. Not all of them, but a lot of them. And he'll take California and probably win Texas by a good amount. But until we see how Bloomberg performs, and of course he's having a town hall meeting right now on Fox News trying to make up for the bad debate that he had a few days ago. So tomorrow will be very telling. By tomorrow night this time, I think we'll have a clearer picture of how things are going to move forward. But don't count Sanders out. I mean, he's for real. He's got a lot of very fervent supporters behind him. And if the college kids and the young people 40 and under turn out in droves for Sanders, then unless conservatives vote for Trump at like a 90% level, anything could happen. We can't take this for granted.
Right. Just like people thought, oh, Trump didn't have a chance. They think, oh, Sanders doesn't have a chance because he's a socialist. But we also have to factor in the continued media abuse of President Trump. We have to factor in potential vote fraud. There's about 10 or 15 different ways to fraud an election. But, gentlemen, you know, as you go out, and Dan and Gary, both of you, and we're trying to do that too, as we go out and speak to different groups, is that to encourage everyone, even if it's a state where they think Trump will not win, like New York or New Jersey or California, we need the number of voters coming out for Trump, because you know, they're always playing this, oh, well, Hillary won the majority. We need as many voters coming out for Trump as possible to have the biggest number. Even it would be great if he won the electoral vote and the majority vote, just to show that it wasn't a fluke. So I encourage you, as you're traveling, that you admonish the audience to get out and vote for Trump, even if you're in an area where you don't think Trump has a chance, again, like New York, New Jersey, California.
Sure, right.
Exhort the people to get out and vote, and get their neighbors, friends to get out and vote. Complacency, you know, we just can't have it, because it's a death knell for the Republic.
You're right. I absolutely agree with you. We've got to do everything we can to get out to vote. And I think that the powers that be, they're going to do everything they can to take advantage of any crisis that happens in the world, just like the coronavirus right now. First thing they did was, you know, come after Trump, trying to make him look bad with all of this. I mean, they're relentless, and they'll keep it up right up until the election. So
right, I always say President Trump could cure cancer, and they'd say, look at all the doctors he put out of business. So it doesn't matter what he does; it's going to be attack, attack, attack. Now, gentlemen, I would like to urge you to stay on and check in on your device and listen in, because our next guest after the 8 o'clock hour is going to be Jeff Epstein, who is a great friend with the late Phil Haney, and he'll be giving us some updates on a couple of things that he's learned in the last several weeks, or the last 10 days since Phil, and many indications are that he was murdered and it wasn't suicide. So I hope you guys stay. And I think, Gary, you probably know Jeff Epstein from your travels.
Yes, I know of him, and I knew Philip Haney personally.
Really?
Spent some time with him, in Buffalo, okay. New York, a couple years.
Yeah, you want to hear what Jeff says.
I want to hear them.
So, yeah, you guys may want to tune in on your device at theword.com.
I think my partner Jim Simpson knows him too. So
yep.
He's on our mailing list.
I've got Simpson's latest article out right here. Phil Haney, my friend and colleague, assassinated. Great guy.
Right, and Jeff Epstein was a great friend, and he's in contact with his fiance probably every other day. So we're looking forward to that update from Jeff Epstein. Hey, gentlemen, thanks for calling it on Monday Night Roundtable. Dan, we look forward to the meeting next week. And Gary, thanks again. We'll be having Jeff Epstein in the next segment on Monday Night Roundtable.